Welcome back. You're listening to Health Action over WBAI 99.5 FM. And my name is Kathy Davis. And today I have a guest who is going to be able to help you with some health issues that sometimes are difficult and challenging for us, but he's very, very well prepared to help you. Dr. Benjamin Asher is a Harvard-trained physician and surgeon who is one of the preeminent ear, nose, and throat specialists in the country in the field of complementary and integrative medicine as it relates to ear, nose, and throat disorders. He has been on the faculty of Harvard, Washington University, and Dartmouth Medical Schools. In addition to publishing numerous articles, Dr. Asher lectures to healthcare professionals and the public, both nationally and internationally. Dr. Asher has been selected one of America's top physicians by the Consumers Research Council of America. He is currently in private practice on Manhattan's East Side. First, I'd like to welcome you, Dr. Asher, to Health Action.
Thank you, Kathy. It's great to be here.
And I know we said here that you are a specialist in ear, nose, and throat, but what really does that mean, and what kind of medicine do you practice?
I do conventional ear, nose, and throat medicine, which means I take care of all the problems in the head and neck, exclusive of the eyes and the brain. But I am an integrative medicine doctor, which means that I not only do conventional medicine, but I also integrate the best and all of the alternative medical things that are relate to what I do. As well, I would am what you would consider a holistic physician. So I think of the person as not only just their body, but I look at the mind and spirit as well.
And also, that's something that's very, very interesting about your practice is that though you've been a successful surgeon, you've elected to give up surgery. Could you tell us why that is?
Over the years in practicing surgery, I found that there were a lot of people who could avoid surgery. And there are many great surgeons out there. And I felt like I knew some other things that could help people, that could help them avoid going to the operating room. My approach is to take care of the whole person. And I really try to look at what the source of the problem is. And I found that if I could find out what the source of the problem was, I could get people better and I could help them avoid surgery. So I opted to give it up.
So in that case, maybe you can talk a little bit about the various alternative and complementary modalities that you do use.
Right. I have quite a tool bag of different approaches, which I bring to bear on different problems. Not everybody will have the same experience. One of the things that I do is cranial osteopathy, which is very helpful for headaches and facial pain. And along with that, I do something called myofascial release, which manages some of the musculoskeletal elements that trigger headaches and facial pain and other things. I use hypnosis for stress management. I teach other stress management tools. I also do nutrition, and I work with nutritional supplements. I also do some conventional testing. The other thing is, on occasion, if a patient needs it, I'll refer out to an other provider. Sometimes I use acupuncturists, and occasionally I'll use a nutritionist, depending.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain for us, you said you use osteopathic cranial manipulation.
Right.
Could you explain to our listeners what this means and how it really helps them?
Yes. I'm actually an MD, but I've taken some special training in a area of osteopathic manipulation called cranial osteopathy. And in that area, what cranial osteopathy is within the central nervous system, there is an intrinsic motion, an expansion and contraction, if you will, which happens about 10 to 12 times a minute. And what's been found is that when this expansion and contraction, which happens, gets obstructed in some way, people have different kinds of medical problems. And so by releasing those restrictions in that pattern, one is able to help people.
So you're actually moving the bones of the face and the neck and the skull?
There is a very, very small change in the in the bones, moving the bones. Mm-hmm. Of course, in children, that those bones in infants, those bones are not as fixed. But in adults, they're more fixed.
Mm. Let's talk about a couple of different kinds of issues that people might have that are that we see a lot of ads on TV about these things. A lot of drugs, you know, where people are encouraged to take this and take that. And perhaps you can talk to us first about sinusitis and the relationship of the sinuses to headaches and other kinds of problems.
The first thing I'd like to say about sinusitis is that it is a very common complaint. People often think that they have sinusitis. A large number of people who believe they have sinusitis technically don't have it. Sinusitis is truly an infection in the sinuses, which are cavities in the skull. We have them in our cheeks and behind our eyes and in our nose. And a sinus infection is actually when those when the sinuses are filled with some infected material. And that's a very specific diagnosis. Many people who have headaches and pressure in their forehead and in their cheeks when they have a cold or even when they don't, they feel so much pressure there, they actually think that they have a sinus infection. And they may get treated with antibiotics or multiple courses of antibiotics when in fact they don't have an infection at all. And that's why it's not getting better. In my experience, most of those people have a problem with what is called myofascial pain. Myofascial pain is a problem where you have small areas of inflammation in muscles, particularly in this case in the neck, which then refer pain to another location, in this case in your forehead. So if you have trigger points in your neck, they give you pressure and pain in your forehead or in your cheeks, and that's not an infection at all. So my particular approach to this problem, and we get very good results, is by releasing those trigger points, the pain goes away. And I've had lots of patients who have had benefit from that.
So is this sort of something that comes to you as a result of stress?
It can be the result of stress. It can be the result of injury. One of the characteristics of trigger points is that they... once they occur, they're with you lifelong unless somebody releases them. So if you fell off a swing when you were five, you would create a trigger point. Now, it may be what's called latent, so it doesn't cause a problem. And then you sleep with the window open at night and get cold air on your neck, and all of a sudden that trigger point wakes up and becomes active. When that happens, that's when you start getting symptoms. Other things that will activate latent trigger points are... colds, like if you get an upper respiratory infection or any kind of chronic disease. But once those trigger points are released and are gone, if they're not being re-injured, if the area is not being re-injured, they're gone. So you don't have problems with
them. So once you're able to do the release, then it's a permanent
thing. A permanent thing. If one is able to get a really a good release there, that's it. So people don't need to keep coming back.
Mm. So how does one know, or how do you determine if it is an actual infection?
Well, I would say, first of all, if there's not any drainage from the nose and one just has a lot of head pressure, that's a sign that it's probably not an infection. It's basically history. So I talk to somebody, and I'd say part of my practice is I spend a lot of time with people. You talk to somebody, you find out what's going on, and then I look in the nose. I have special scope to look in the nose, and if there's no, for lack of a better word, pus coming out of the nose, then that's one thing. And then sometimes we get X-ray imaging, which also tells us about the sinuses.
Mm. So a lot of people have been known to get surgery for what they consider to be sinusitis or sinus problems. How effective is that, and what else should people be doing?
First of all, there is a place for surgery in sinus disease, and the people that get operated on that need to have surgery will benefit from it. The problem is that, one, I think that there are certain things that can be looked at more deeply in terms of sinusitis to avoid surgery. I look at allergies, food sensitivities. I believe that actually there's a issue with heavy metals out there, that people have a lot of heavy metal exposure, and I think that impacts our immunity, and in some people that makes an impact on their sinuses. There are some people actually that are looking at parasites in the intestinal tract as being an issue for patients developing sinusitis. Because in my opinion, the sinuses are just a window into the rest of the body. You have to look at the whole person. So if there's a lot of problems going on elsewhere and you're not taking care of them, then the infections come back or the problems come back. So two points. One is many people, after they've had surgery, have a recurrence of their problems. And that's probably because the source of the problem has not been identified. It's not an anatomic issue. And either it's related to a disease that's in the body, or it could be related to trigger points. And I would also say that for headaches, surgery is the least effective for that. So if you're having sinus surgery and the reason you're having it for is for sinus headaches, in general, statistically, you'll have the least benefit.
Hmm. Another really tough problem that people have getting help with is tinnitus, the problem of the inner ear. Maybe you can tell folks what that is and how they can be helped with that.
Tinnitus is ringing in the ear, and what it is, it's the abnormal perception of sound when it's not there. It is probably, of all the things that ear, nose, and throat doctors have to manage, one of the most challenging. First of all, I would say we don't really understand where the sound is coming from. Sometimes it's coming from the inner ear. Sometimes it's being generated within the brain. sometimes it's because a patient has a hearing loss. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it's an indicator of a more serious problem, like a tumor. Because there are so many different reasons to have that tinnitus occurs, there are probably many different possible avenues for a person to get benefit. In my experience, some people, a percentage of people have problems with their neck where they have myofascial pain. And myofascial pain can cause what we call autonomic dysfunction. That is a problem with the autonomic nervous system. That's the part of the nervous system that functions when we don't have to think about. Some people who have trigger points will aggravate their tinnitus. And I find that in those people, if you release the trigger points, the pain gets better. Some people, a small percentage of people benefit from some herbs like ginkgo. Some people benefit from stress reduction. Hypnosis is very effective for some people. Some people will benefit from a device that you can put in your ear that creates a sound a little different than the tinnitus that fatigues out the sound. I guess the big take-home point is that one shouldn't lose hope if one has tinnitus. There are lots of things to explore.
Hmm. And another disorder that I have seen enormous amount of ads for is heartburn and acid reflux. Can you explain to us what that is and how you should really handle a problem?
If one were to watch, understand from the television, acid reflux is certainly one of the major problems that everybody in the world has right now. And what acid reflux means is that the acid that's in the stomach is escaping into the esophagus, which is the connection between the mouth and the stomach where the food goes to get into the stomach. It's escaping into the esophagus. There's a little valve there that tightens over the stomach that's supposed to hold the acid in. And when the acid escapes, it is called reflux. Now, symptoms of acid reflux include heartburn, and how people come to my office with the problem, they come with often sore throat or hoarseness or pain in their throat. Now, people who have reflux actually don't produce too much acid. It's just that the acid escapes. But the standard treatment out there is to give somebody a drug which reduces acid. Some drugs reduce acid 50%. Some of the more powerful drugs that are on the market reduce acid about 95%. And I think in some people you need to have strong drugs. On the other hand, a more natural approach is to try to get food out of the stomach faster so that there's not the opportunity for it to splash back up. And my approach in that case is to use digestive enzymes. And I find that in a number of people who don't have severe reflux, their symptoms go away with that. Some people who come in complaining of throat discomfort are often thought to have reflux and are treated, and they don't seem to get better with the drugs. I find those people have a condition called muscle tension dysphonia, where there's actual tension in the throat that's causing symptoms. I had a patient the other day who came in complaining of thickness in his throat. And in fact, doing some muscular releases made a huge difference, and he didn't need to be on his medications.
Hmm. So for the medication, the acid reflux medication, what are the negative aspects of people taking that?
There are a number of side effects. Some people may feel bloating and feel just sort of poor digestion in general. There is some people have raised the question of how healthy it is to shut off your acid production that great for prolonged periods of time. And I don't think that the answer is in on that yet. There's some suggestion that there's been some increase in the last 10 years, there's been some increase in a type of cancer of the esophagus, and some people have wondered whether it's related to the use of proton pump inhibitors. But that answer, that epidemiologically has not been found yet. But people raise the question. And it is a strong medication, and of course, if you don't need to be on a medicine, why take it?
And digestive enzymes are natural?
They are natural, yeah. They come from plants, and there's really no side effect to taking them.
We've covered a lot of issues that are primarily issues for adults, and I'd like to talk a little bit about children. And children have a lot of ear infections. So maybe you can talk about childhood ear infections.
Yes. About 75% of children will have had at least one ear infection by the time they're 3 years of age. It's a very common problem. It's probably the most common problem that children go to the pediatrician for. And it occurs because there's a mechanical issue where the tube that goes from the middle ear to behind the nose, called the eustachian tube, is not functioning properly. And it allows negative pressure to build up in the middle ear. So a vacuum builds up in the middle ear, it gets bacteria up into the middle ear, and then you get an ear infection. Now, there are a couple main points about ear infections in children. The Center for Disease Control is really concerned about resistant microorganisms and how much we're using antibiotics. And the first thing to know is that antibiotics aren't really a requirement for every ear infection. If a child is not terribly sick, that is a fever over 102, not an absolute misery, or if they're not too young, one can actually not treat it with antibiotics. The ear infection gets better on its own. The statistic is that, in fact, you need to treat 9 children to get one child better with an ear infection with antibiotics. So really, for most children, the antibiotics are not altering the course of the ear infections at all. So the take-home message, one, is that antibiotics are not a requirement. And you can always ask your pediatrician, do I really need to give my child an antibiotic right now? And I think that that's an important question because antibiotics are not great. They alter the intestinal flora. They do a lot of things that overall, in the long run, are not particularly good. Not to mention the fact that allowing the ear infection to stop on its own allows the body to handle it, and it strengthens the body's own immune system. So that's the first thing. The next thing is that there are some nutritional supplements that do help. Fish oil, which is a really important supplement. Fish oils are high in omega-3 fatty acids, which are really important for cell membrane structure. And what happens is that when we're deficient in those, the cells that fight infections, their cell membrane becomes rigid and doesn't work very well. So when we take the fish oil, that allows the membrane to become more supple and work better. And so fish oil is very helpful, and selenium and vitamin E. So taking a fish oil supplement and a multivitamin that has got vitamin E and selenium will help prevent ear infections.
And these nutrients are safe for children to take?
They are safe for children to take. I wouldn't take a high dose of selenium, but if you find a multivitamin that has selenium in it, that's fine. Now, on that other point, another way to prevent ear infections in children is to keep them healthy so they don't get colds. And in Sweden, they fortify their milk with a probiotic. Probiotic are organisms that are good for you. They're in your intestines. And there's a probiotic called, Lactobacillus rhamnosus. You don't need to write it down. But taking probiotics seems to help keep children healthy. And particularly if your child has been on antibiotics, they should be on probiotics. That's an absolute must.
And for those of you who might have tuned in late, we're speaking with Dr. Benjamin Asher, MD, PC, and he's a restorative ENT, ear, nose, and throat physician. He offers complementary alternative therapies in addition to conventionally trained. And for those of you who would like to make contact with him, you can go to his website, www.restorativeent.com, or you can call at 212-223-4225. Again, that's 212-223-4225. And I did have some more questions I wanted to ask you about nutrition and stress, but unfortunately we are kind of out of time. So maybe you can give us a little bit of a wrap-up statement so that people will have a sense of what to take away about the practice that you offer.
The takeaway message is really that there are a lot of things that one can do to try to maintain health, and I try to approach the body from that perspective.
Okay, and again, this is Health Action over WBAI. 99.5 FM in New York, and my very special guest today has been Dr. Benjamin Asher, and he is a Harvard-trained physician and surgeon who is one of the preeminent ear, nose, and throat specialists in the country in the field of complementary and integrative medicine as it relates to ear, nose, and throat disorders. And again, his phone number is area code 212-223-4225, and his website is www.restorativeent.com, and that's
R-E-S-T.
Oh, I'm sorry, R-E-S-T. I'm helping people. R-E-S-T. R-E-S-T-O-R-A-T-I-V-E-E-N-T.com. RestorativeENT.com. And for those of you who are interested, I've invited Dr. Asher to come back in a couple of weeks, and we're going to open up the phone so that you can ask your questions. So I'm sure many of you do have questions of him. And again, so stay tuned. Coming up in a few moments will be Cat Radio Cafe, and this has been Health Action over WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. My name is Kathy Davis. Thank you, and stay tuned.